Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. Happy Friday to you, my friend.
Man, good to be here at the end of the week, another week with three shows. You know, if you hadn't heard them all from this week, hey, get into the archives, guys. It's Wednesday's show is a lot of fun, I can tell you that. So dive in.
I'll tell you what we've done. We've lined them up and we've knocked them down. But let me just comment on what's been going on, the dynamics between the two of us throughout the course of the week, okay? Because Tuesday, we started out on Tuesday rather than Monday, and you were kind of grumpy, all right?
Yeah, I was.
You were the grumpy old man.
That's fair.
Wednesday, we were both happy and having fun times with the amazing stuff. And I think what really drove us over the top was the more amazing stuff. I feel that that's what really made the show work.
It was amazing stuff, and then we, you know, we icing on the cake, more amazing stuff.
So, we pushed it with more amazing stuff. That's right. And now tonight, it's a role reversal. Okay, so Tuesday, happy Stephen, or excuse me, grumpy Stephen, happy Phil. Wednesday, happy everybody. Friday, happy Stephen, grumpy Phil. Okay, so that's, you know,
okay.
It's got to work out that way because I'm going to be Mr. I don't know. You can be grumpy too if you want to. We could just be like those old guys in the Muppet Show. But
bad cop, right?
yeah, we can always work it that way. Who says there has to be a good cop? But actually, I'm not going to be super grumpy. I'm actually, as you know, as anyone who's listened to the show may have heard, pretty optimistic about humanity and where things are going. But I do have a pet peeve. And one of my pet peeves is transhumanists, singularitarians, future-minded folks like ourselves who talk about our fantastic destiny as gods, okay?
Yeah.
And I thought we'll spend a little bit of time on that one this evening.
You know,
I've got this – go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, just generally, it's a good idea, you know, just sort of a life rule, Phil, is – you know, don't overpromise and underdeliver. Do the opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, underpromise and overdeliver. So I would just say to my fellow singularity-minded folks, and we count ourselves among you. You know, don't overpromise this business. I don't think that you necessarily. I mean, and maybe giving away too much about the show, about where we're going with the show.
Go for it, man. It's okay. That's all right. We love spoilers.
But, yeah, we're spoiling it right here. It just, you know, it might be better if we just deliver the awesomeness without necessarily talking about, you know, all of us becoming gods. So,
well, here's a story I wrote. I wrote this story last night before I went to bed. Sometimes I tell myself a story before I go to sleep. I do it for so many other
people. That helps.
Might as well do it for myself. And it was related to this show. Once upon a time, there were some apes who thought that they were human. So they decided to walk like humans, talk like humans, dress like humans, create a human civilization, and so forth. Then some of the apes became transhumanists and decided that rather than being human, it was time for them to become gods. But a few of the apes had a different idea. Becoming gods didn't sound like such a bad idea, but it seemed like a task better suited for actual humans rather than, say, apes pretending to be humans. Otherwise, we would have apes pretending to be humans, pretending to be gods. That just seemed like a little bit too big of a stretch. So these apes decided to do something else. They decided to become human. And that is my thesis for this evening, okay? I believe
becoming
that,
human. Okay.
Yeah, let's work on becoming human. Because I don't think we've finished that one yet. Okay? And just to talk about the title of the show. I've told this story once before, but it bears retelling. I'm a member of multiple transhumanist and futuristic groups all over social media. And there's one group on LinkedIn. I don't think they use this name anymore. But they were very evolutionary-oriented and very much into talking about taking on these new capabilities. And the name of the group was Turning Into Gods. And they spelled it Turning Into Gods, G-O-D apostrophe S. Which, of course, to me, raised the immediate problem of, okay, maybe before we focus on turning into gods, we should focus on basic punctuation, okay? Or the inevitable question.
Gods what? What are you
depending on how you want to read it. Turning into gods what exactly? That's an unfinished thought.
You've said that we're going to belong to God in some way and do something for him or be something for him. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
That
apostrophe
S, yeah.
Finish the sentence for
crying out.
So that's our title. And we begin with this story, The Immortality Upgrade. Is the Mormon Transhumanist Association working out the roadmap to godhood? Well, listen, I'm not going to criticize anyone's religious beliefs, okay?
Yeah.
And if it is a tenet of the Mormon faith that God was once as we are and that we can become as God is, then, you know, that's their religious beliefs, and I don't
Well, you know, put it this way, we don't do politics on this show. We are even less likely to want to criticize someone's religious belief than we would criticize political beliefs. So we just don't do that.
What I would suggest is that the Mormon Transhumanist Association take a step back and examine whether the two things really sync up. You know, I don't know, right? I'm not a theological scholar, certainly know nothing much about Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But is there really that close of a correspondence between their theological ideas as expressed in their faith and all of this cool technological stuff? And if there is, or if there's a roadmap, great. You know, work on it, do it humbly, you know, do it the way the rest of the Bible and the Book of Mormon tell you to do it. And, you know, I've got no problem. I'm not going to argue with them about trying to become gods if those things
teach your children quietly. Yeah.
Yeah. I would just suggest that to those transhumanists who are not really Mormons or not remotely Mormons, as most aren't, that they also take a step back and say, well, I'm not quite sure how well this corresponds. But if they're not for us, I mean, if they're not against us, they're for us, and it's all good. I don't criticize where they go with their faith. I think there's a lot of interesting ways to interpret how religion relates to transhumanism. I'm kind of partial to the phenomenon of man, the Pierre Chardin narrative on how we're kind of evolution, how we can sort of evolve into this kind of Christ consciousness, and that's okay too. I don't think that any one group is going to have the undisputed roadmap to godhood, and I really think it would be a bad idea to start thinking about it in those terms. I think if we're going to quote the Bible, I guess the Tower of Babel story comes to mind, and Nimrod. You know, once you go down that, I've got the the roadway
are the Greek, you know, also there's the Greek myth of is it Ithacus or which one flew too close to the sun?
Icarus,
right?
Yeah.
Icarus, that's the one.
Yeah, and I'm not a big believer in, you know, warning people off about hubris. I don't suggest it when people want to do amazing technological things or they want to increase human capability or they want to increase human lifespan. I don't say, oh, that's hubris. You can't do it with the gods. I don't say that. But when people say, I want to become God, I'm like, okay, well, let's just step back. And, let's take a few baby steps first, okay? You know, because one day we might be in a better position to talk about becoming gods than I personally feel I am right now. You know, I would benefit, I think, from being a good human, you know, being a good man. And
yeah.
I think
at least wait until after the singularity before we have that conversation. You know?
I think that, you know, a sexy immortal billionaire with superpowers is well within the wheelhouse of humanity. And
right.
And I'm all for becoming one of those. You know, I kind of feel like I'm one of those.
Let's be Tony Stark first, right?
Let's be Tony Stark first. Let's be Batman first. You know, then
right.
Superman. Because even Superman doesn't think he's God, right? You know, he's a pretty
humble
guy.
You could be forgiven for thinking so after the last couple of movies, but I digress. I'm sorry.
We could totally go there. And remind me, we should do a show about Batman versus Superman, because I want to explain a couple of things they really got wrong in that movie. But let's
do that. Maybe next week or something. That'd be
fun. We'll have to do a show on that. Anyway, let's talk more about the other thing. How do we get better at being human? Okay? Because ultimately, transhumanists can all agree on that idea. We don't have to become gods, and we don't have to argue about what it means to become gods. We don't have to argue about whose ideas about God are right in order for us to just improve the human condition. So we've got a few stories here that take us there. And we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about those. Stephen, unless you want to talk more about becoming gods. Did I miss anything?
No, I'm good.
So let's talk about becoming human. I'm going to come back to Kurzweil thinking we can live forever. And I want to start with this, the experimental diet that mimics a rare genetic mutation. Have you read up on this, the fasting mimicking diet?
I'm all for anything that would give me the benefits of fasting without having to fast. No, I mean, that's what we want, right, Phil? We want
to
lose the weight. We want to get our body chemistry working as those of us, as those who do fast, but without the pain of it, right?
Exactly. What I love about the idea is that what they're seeing chemically going on in the body, if you fast, or potentially if you follow this diet that has some of the same effects on your body as fasting, the effect of it is very similar to this bizarre mutation that lets people pretty much eat whatever they want, and they have low blood pressure, they are at very little risk for heart attack. They've got all of these positive signs about aging. Their bodies don't necessarily decay in the same way. I mean, they die. It's not like they don't die. But these people, a lot of them are obese. They live in a, I think the example they give is from, oh, I'm sorry, somewhere in Latin America, and I can't remember where. But you know, they eat a very heavy rice-based diet. You know, they're not living any kind of austere life or anything like that. But because of this mutation, they have all these health markers of extremely healthy, fit people. And going on this fasting mimicking diet apparently replicates a lot of that, the same mechanism that gives a lot of those same benefits. And I want to tell you, Stephen, that I have been trying that diet out this week. And it's not that easy. On Monday and Tuesday, I was at about 1,000 calories a day. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm doing about 750. Okay, so here to finish up the week, I'm on these 750 calorie days, and it's hard. But I found people who self hack one of these quantified self individuals. Had written a piece about trying it himself, and he was big on avocados. He said, you know, you can eat a couple of avocados a day, and that gets you your 750 calories, and it gives you most of the nutrients. And I was like, okay, well, that's easy, right? And I've modified it just a little bit. I take the two avocados, and I cut them up with some lettuce. I put a little bit of Caesar dressing in there. I put a little bit of cheese on there, not much. You know, I'm not going way over, just a tiny bit over to give it some flavor. And that's a pretty darn good – I mean, if you like avocados, I'm like, well, shoot, I could, you know, I could stay on this for – okay, 5 days is tops. All right. There's no way
well,
of going past that. But but you say, okay, 5 days of that and then 25 days of normal life. And it's not necessarily a cure for obesity, although it helps. But what it really does is it gives you these markers for being younger and being healthier. And so far, you know, we can check in a few months and see how it's going. But so far, I'm pretty psyched about it.
So you're saying that doing this like 1 week and then, you know, basically 1 week a month kind of deal would give you,
that's right,
give
five
you some
days
benefits?
A month. Yeah. Yeah.
That's doable, man. You can do almost anything for 5 days a month if you can have the rest of the month to rebuild your resolve, you know, allow you to eat what you want.
Talking about this on Facebook, Michael Darling left a comment. He said, not enough bacon or whiskey in this diet. And I said, well, again, you know,
you've got
25 days where you can have all the bacon and whiskey you want, and then 5 days to build your appetite back up, basically. The idea is it grows out of this effort to do these water fasts, and people would do those for 2 or 3 days. 5 days would be a long run, I think, for no food at all.
Right.
I guess
the good thing about something like this, Phil, is it allows your body, you're pressing reset in a way, you know?
That's right.
You're rebooting your digestive system. Your circulatory system is getting a break from having too much insulin, things like that, hyperinsulinemia.
Absolutely.
All
that digesting food is work. And
when
your body's doing that work, it can't do other things. So if you take that out of the equation for a few days, it lets your body do some stuff that it wouldn't, you know, that it normally couldn't have done.
Maybe some maintenance is going on that wouldn't be happening otherwise.
That's cool.
I'm going to let you do that for a couple of months and report back. And I will let that serve as my inspiration if you see some good positive benefits from this. So that's cool.
Okay, and I'm going to be talking to my doctor about it, too. I thought I'd do it for a while first and then talk to my doctor. I don't recommend that for other people.
Generally, you talk to your doctor first, but okay. So you're doing the true quantified self body hacking kind of thing. You're doing it on your own.
What I'll tell the doctor is it's okay. I read about it in the blog. So
I read about it on the Internet, so surely it's okay.
Okay, so anyway, this is just the kind of quantified self-hacking, do-it-yourself, new things that are being invented to improve our health that's happening all the time. And then let's throw that one back to Ray Kurzweil thinks we could start living forever by 2029. Okay?
Right.
He says,
obviously dieting doesn't get us forever. What you're doing, Phil, is you're trying to build a bridge to 2029, right? By living healthy and doing what you can do to make it to 2029. And,
right. What Kurzweil
can,
is saying is that,
yeah.
I mean, you know, he says singularity by 2045, the escape velocity actually.
By 2029, you're close enough.
By 2029.
Yeah.
By 2029, we should be at actuarial escape velocity, which is the idea that for every year, every year they add a year to your lifespan. Okay,
right.
So you got to live there, and that can't just be the average for everybody. In my case, it's got to be for pretty old people, right? To 2029. That's how many years from now?
Well,
that's only 13
we're here.
Years
here
now.
2029
I'm
is only like what 13 years away.
Yeah. If we hit actuarial escape velocity at 2029, I'm skating and blowing smoke, man. I'm ready to hit it. But I like to think that what if he's off by 20 years, right? I'd still like to cash in on that. So we're all looking for our ways to improve our lives. And I think it's really interesting that there's just this kind of movement when you look at the quantified self movement. You look at all this stuff that people are doing, kind of with their own health, that pushes us in that direction. I don't know that all of those will add up to actuarial escape velocity. I think, you know, some other big breakthroughs will have to come along, but they're helping. And, you know, it's like you want to live forever.
And
figure out how to live just a little longer. That's I think, the trick.
Right. And these things are cumulative, too. I mean, it's, you know, you if something delivers a slight benefit and you put it together with something else that delivers the same benefit on its own in a different way, sometimes you don't get two times the benefit. Sometimes it's 1 + 1 = 8, you know, because you're putting the two things together. Sometimes the cumulative effect of a couple of different breakthroughs, actually you get more for your money, more bang for your buck. So that I hope is what we're looking at as we start solving these problems.
Yeah, you know, I think, and again, it's a matter of calibrating and recalibrating our expectations and what we're hoping to accomplish. And because I just have to, you know, it's almost like a compulsion with me now to take issue with headlines. My immediate response to this one was, well, if I'm going to start living forever, I started in 1962, right?
when I was born.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to start living forever in 2029. People are going to start living forever whenever they were born. The idea is that that the death risk, at least the actuarial death risk that's always hung over our head, disappears at that point, theoretically. Now, I think another story that points in the same direction, just to jump down a little bit. I know we're kind of skipping around on our planned topics tonight, Stephen, but, you know, you're good at sticking with me on a Friday.
Hey, we've got a smart audience that can follow.
Oh, they love this kind of stuff. Craig Venter's new longevity startup will make 100 the new 60. And here it's like triangulating around these ideas, right? So here we've got Craig Venter, this biotechnologist, this guy who decoded the human genome. We know he's been working on issues of longevity. We know he's been working on life extension, and he's got a new company that he wants to extend human health span. He wants to make us live healthier longer, which is the key, right? You make 100 the new 60. I mean, if you've seen 100-year-old people, and there are a few around, how would you describe those individuals?
Frail, I would not recommend. You know, that is not the way. It's dangerous to live that frail. Put it that way. You're not long for the world if you're as frail as the typical 100-year-old person is today. You know. So
recently, a friend of mine had a birthday party. Her dad had a birthday party. Turned 90, World War II vet, and there was a picture of him and the picture of the cake. And I looked at that, and I was just – they had a picture of him in his uniform in World War II and then a picture of him on the cake. And I thought, well, thank God he made it. I mean, you know, how awesome that he made it. And he still looks pretty good, but you look at what happened over those 70-some years, you know, between when that picture was taken, the first picture was taken and the second picture was taken. And, yeah, what you're looking at is this cumulative degeneration. Frailty is the right word. You know, I mean, it's awesome. I guess the first thing I would say, anybody who's 100, they're awesome, right? They're completely awesome. And
right.
Lord love
you. You congratulations. You beat the odds because
yeah, absolutely.
You know, 99.9% of the people in the world do not make it to 100, right? So
that's right. So good on you for making it.
But I think most.
But
people
I wish you
better.
Could do it and be a little more vital, right? I wish you could.
That's
feel
right,
a little bit
and
better.
And enjoy more of the things that you enjoyed when you were 40 or 30 or 20.
Yeah, or even 60, right? Which is
yeah.
which is what Craig's talking about. We'll make 100 the new 60, which we know what 60 looks like. And I used to think 60 was as old as the hills. You know, I've got a very different view on what 60 is today, believe me. but when you get to 60, you're not young, right, in our culture anymore. You know, there's been all this talk about how 50 is going to be the new 30 and, you know, 60 is going to be the new 40 and all that kind of stuff. But you're not young anymore at 60. It used to be that would be kind of the cutoff and you're definitely old after 60. But,
yeah. You know, when they built the Social Security system, during the time of FDR, it was made with the idea that, well, you know, not too many people are going to make it to retirement. This will work, and we can afford to do this for people who make it to this age, because most people won't.
Right.
And of course, things have changed. When you hear about somebody dying at age 65, oh, so young. You know, seriously, people talk that way now.
It's true.
But it's,
and there really is that feeling. You know, there have been biological changes. I mean, you know, health, lifestyle changes, but also just kind of social expectations around how people will live and what that stage of life means. And you know, you give anybody the choice. You give any 100-year-old the choice of saying, hey, would you rather feel like you feel right now or when you were 60? Right? Ask an 80-year-old the same thing, right? They're going to, you know, what they're, you know, what they're going to say. I mean, and what I like about this is, again, it's this kind of incremental approach. We're not saying we're going to make 100 the new 28, right?
Yeah.
We're saying, you know, we make 100 the new 60. And I think this goes back to the idea of, do we want to take on immortality, or do we want to take on expanding how long we live and expanding how long we stay healthy and feel good, right?
Yeah, I think it's smart, instead of talking about, you know, extending the lifespan, extend the health span, you know.
Yes.
We don't want to just live to be 110 and enjoy more years in adult diapers. We want to enjoy more years doing the things we love to do, right? So,
exactly.
That's what Venter's talking about. So,
yeah, so
what
I
what,
use
what,
all of these. To me, these life extension topics are all analogous to the turning into gods discussion, as far as I'm concerned. This is one aspect of it, right? Do you want to be immortal, or do you want to actually work on the problem and you know, become human, right? Be human a little longer. Make the human experience last a little bit longer. So I feel like those really kind of cover it. I threw in a couple other topics here that I just thought we could hit real fast, and we don't have too much to say about them. But why physicists are saying consciousness is a state of matter, like a solid, a liquid, or a gas. I don't know if you had a chance to read this one, Stephen, but what I love about that is, okay, so as we learn more, we seem to get farther and farther away from having any idea what consciousness is, right? I mean, would you agree that the more we learn about it, the less we seem to know about it? Is that true?
Yeah, it's one of the hard problems, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, let's become human. Let's understand this impossible aspect of ourselves, and then we'll work on to you know, as apes pretending to be human. I think we've done pretty well, just even taking on the problem of consciousness. But let's make a little more headway with it. And finally, novelty in the brain. Why new things make us feel so good. Stephen, no one had to read us this news story. We knew this, right? This is why we love doing gadget shows, why we love doing the show we did on Wednesday, and why we love doing this show. You know, there's this reason.
Hey, you know, even just talking about this stuff, you get a little endorphin rush. I'm definitely in on this.
Yeah. You know, so if you tell me that that you're going to make me into a god, I'm going to be immortal, all-knowing, all-seeing, invincible, blah, 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 I'm like, well, okay, but you know what? If I can continue living as I'm living, if the world can stay interesting, and if I can continue to learn cool new things, I'm ready to go on like that indefinitely. How about you?
Well, you know, you tell me I can be a god, great, but can I first get the new iPhone? I mean,
exactly. Yeah, you know,
this newest gadget that you know, marginally helps us do a few more things, right? And
exactly.
That's, you know, and so it's baby steps to the singularity is what we're talking about. So
that's right. I think the world is still pretty amazing and pretty interesting, and pretty worth pursuing, just in the quest to becoming human. And with that, I see that we are once again out of time. Stephen, it's been great as always. Thanks for being with us, everyone. We'll be back again next week.